Welcome in to the 191st episode of the Young Terps podcast, Mason Viner and Jack Rothenberg. Talking about what was really one of the more disappointing Maryland games I can remember. Jack, how about you?
Yeah, definitely. Not a great performance from the Terps Friday night. We were definitely expecting more out of them, but you got to move on to next week, put this game behind you and sort of put your best foot forward and move towards Ohio State this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, and we are not really going to get that much into the Ohio State game. We'll have another podcast later this week to talk about that. I thought this Iowa game deserved its own show and really a lot to break down. Despite the score, 51-14, the Terps lose. But I think there was a lot more to it, Jack. We were talking about it a little bit before the show. A couple of key points for me. One is it was just a perfect storm of failure for Maryland. I don't really put the early interception from Malia in that category, but everything from the Chigakonkwo touchdown at near the end of the first quarter to Maryland taking a 7-3 lead into the second quarter, everything from there went, I think, downhill is an understatement, Jack. Not sure I have a word for the second quarter. It was honestly one of the worst quarters I've ever seen a football team play in my life.
Yeah, I talked about it on the Big Dog postgame show right after the game. It was the fact that Iowa scored four touchdowns solely in that second quarter. They put up 31 points in that second quarter, four touchdowns off 91 total yards, which is just crazy to think about. It was the turnovers and the penalties that killed Maryland and put them way behind very early in that, or not early in the first half, but in that second quarter. And it was bad, especially because after Dante Dimas got hurt in that second quarter, it was the fact that they kept trying to throw the ball. They didn't revert back to the run game even in the slightest. I believe in that first quarter they only had one or two total rushes, and it was working because Leo was being Leo, finding the open targets, and they were moving the ball down the field. But once Dimas got hurt and he started throwing a couple more interceptions, I was very surprised they didn't start handing the ball off to Taion Fleet-Davis and the other group of backs that they have. That was one thing that really shocked me from Friday night.
Yeah, and a couple of points, and I don't mean to complain about the game because I'm big when it comes to football on you play the game the way it's reffed. A couple of plays that I would highlight, and this may just be me as a Maryland guy looking at them. One of them is the Dante Dimas fumble. I think his forward progress was clearly stopped on the play. He was going to the ground in an awkward position. I'm surprised they did not go back and let Maryland have the ball at the 11-yard line because his forward progress, again, was clearly stopped. He was on his way to the ground with no forward momentum. I think the play should have been blown dead at that point. The second refereeing point, and I thought that some of the unsportsmanlike conduct calls, especially the one against Lautez Rogers, was a bit ridiculous. But going back to what I was saying, I think the fumble on the interception, Leah's third second interception in the game, the Terps' third turnover. I think there was, in the NFL, I think Maryland gets that ball. A clear and distinct recovery was made by both Darryl Jones and Johari Branch before the Iowa players joined the dog pile. I thought that was a very, very questionable call. The Dimas one, I can it's while the play is moving on. The fumble recovery, I don't understand that one at all. I think Maryland had a clear recovery on that play, and that was really the tipping point of this game.
Yeah, and going right before the fumble recovery and the dispute with that, it was the throws that Leah was making in that first half, especially late, getting to the total of three or four picks, those receivers were not open at all, especially the one I'm pretty sure that you're mentioning now. It was Corey Dyches was going from right to left across the field. He was totally blanketed by the DB, and Leah decided to force the ball for absolutely no reason instead of trying to find his second target. And all these people were talking Leah for Heisman. Leah's been playing great. Yeah, he had 10 touchdowns to one interception. That was his ratio before this game. But when the lights were bright and all the fans showed out, he wasn't able to put together a good game. And I'm hoping he can respond this upcoming week because there's a lot that he needs to work on, especially when the lights are bright, especially on national television.
You know, and that's a good point. And being around the teams that I've been around in my life, both at the high school and college level, adversity response is the thing that every coach wants to hammer home. Adversity response is how you win games because, look, let's face it, Maryland's not Alabama. And even Alabama, you go back and look at the Florida game from 2 weeks ago, they're up whatever it was, 21-3. And Florida, on their home field in front of about 95,000 fans that they pack into that stadium, comes all the way back to the point of challenging them for the game. But what does a team like Alabama do? And you can look at this. It doesn't have to be Alabama. Alabama might just be the best example of this. Alabama responded. They met the game, and they finished the game. They could have just folded. There was every opportunity in that game for them to fold. But it's how they respond. That turns a team that isn't great into a good team. Is because everybody's going to be faced with that. Every player has their own ups and downs, but it's getting to the next play, having that short memory, and moving on that Maryland's quarterback specifically doesn't have. Maryland gave up zero sacks in this game. Now, they didn't have much opportunity to give up sacks, but if you look around, yeah, Maryland was beat, but they weren't beat 51-14 without the interceptions.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things that I want to talk about right now is that without Dante Demas, do you think that Leah and this offense can put up points and be able to compete with all these other teams? You're talking about Alabama, obviously, like they might be an asterisk because they're such a big program and all that. But do you actually think without Dante Demas, obviously through five games was Leah's top target, do you think that this team, this offense specifically, can put up points and stay competitive in big games?
I do, and I'm a little bit holding out that Dante Demas' season's over. That's not been confirmed by any Maryland insider. Some Maryland insiders have said that they've seen him around campus. He does have the leg in a brace and with crutches, but certainly does not look like somebody who suffered a catastrophic injury. That's a direct report from Terrapin Times, our friends over there. So some kind of inspiring information when it comes to Demas. But look at everything that Maryland's put out this year. They have such a great wide receiver core. Again, looking at exactly what Coach Loxley has said, they wrote an article called Wide Receiver U last week going into the game featuring Demas, Jayshon Jones, Daryl Jones. I don't even think they even talked about Jarrett in that game. So if you're looking at what they've said, yeah, they have some big-time targets. Daryl Jones and Brian Cobbs, and you could even go further down these list of Carrier. Those guys are fifth-year seniors. This is their moment. Your best guy's knocked down. Your teammate's knocked down. Can you respond? And if you notice the way that I've been talking about this game, everything is now about the response going forward. You got to pick up and move on, whether it's with Demas or with that. You have a lot of talent in that room, guys like Deshaun McDougal, Nick DeGennaro, guys who haven't even gotten a chance yet that Mike Loxley has talked highly about. Now, we'll really get to see. Is that coach speak? Is he just talking up his guys? Or are these guys legitimate ball players? And that's where I think we are with this Maryland team right now. Was everything talk, smoke and mirrors, per usual, the old Maryland football way that everybody likes to go to the minute they get knocked down? Or is this actually different? Is there a standard, or is there just, this losing attitude?
Yeah, and with you saying that you think that they can bounce back, I agree with you, and that's where I differ with some other reporters I was talking to Friday night in the press box, is they were comparing this game to 2 years ago when Maryland got blown out 59-0 to Penn State. And that's what we've been talking about over the past couple of weeks, that we think this team is different. And even with the score being 51-14 against Iowa, I still believe that this team is better than they were 2 years ago. And I think that they've learned from the players that were there then and are still on the team now. I think they've learned, and this team is a lot better than they were. So I think I do think that they can bounce back and hopefully at least get to that 6-win mark.
Yeah, and I think that has to be your goal right now. And that's another spot where I think a lot of our fellow Terp faithful are lost a little bit is, look, this is a 3-win team the last year that they played. They were really, I don't really know you can judge last year. 2-3 is the record. Throw that out. This team hasn't been to a bowl game in a long time. This program has not been to a bowl game since the first year of the DJ Durkin era. They got really close with Matt Canada, but it didn't happen. So I think everybody needs to get their expectations, including myself and including both of us, Jack and myself, who predicted Maryland was going to win this game, need to get their expectations back into a reasonable manner. If this team can win 6 or 7 games this year, I think it's a massive step forward. It is a massive step forward. You can recruit with that. Now, going back to what I said last week, you're still looking to tell guys that they've got to come here and make a difference unless they're able to beat a Penn State or Ohio State or Michigan this year. you're looking a lot of the same recruiting pitch, but at least they'll go to a bowl game. You know, if they win that bowl game, at least they get the money from winning the bowl game. So I think this was a big, almost double take from a lot of Maryland fans that really thought we were there, like that 2001 year. Well, they're not. This proved that. But there is a lot of progress left to be made this year. But again, you talk about, go back to exactly what Mike Loxley talked about, when Maryland was all about setting the standard, getting fans in the stadium, playing up to what Maryland expects Maryland to do, not what everybody expects Maryland to do. And they clearly missed that mark this last game. They clearly haven't really played to what they've set their standard at and since that West Virginia game, maybe since the Howard game. But if you want to go around and tell everybody that's going to be different and then put that result on the field, you're going to have more and more problems getting people into the stadium, getting people to commit money towards your program, and getting to where you want to be. Every time they show up on national TV and lose like this, you get further and further detached from your fan base, I think is a good way to put it.
Yeah, and this one game should not define their season, like you were talking about. This week they have Iowa State, but it doesn't slow down from there. 2 weeks after that, they have Indiana, then Penn State, then Michigan State, all great teams. A couple of those games are at home, so there are going to be opportunities for this team to show that they can win big games, especially at home in front of fans. Hopefully they'll show out and have a great environment. It's very disappointing to see your team get blown out like that at home in this big game. When you come in 4-0.
And Jack, I think there's credit due to a lot of Maryland fans that stayed in the stadium that did not believe the game was over really until halftime. Because it really didn't look over. It was so fast that they got down in this game that you didn't see the usual down 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. There's this mass exodus of people back into the parking lot. People stuck around in this game. You know, it was a really electric environment from everything that I've heard. And Jack, you and I had a discussion about this. Especially after Maryland scored, everybody felt like it was going to be the different game, that they're going to make it. But I'll be honest, looking around social media this weekend and a lot of my friends that go to the University of Maryland, and Jack, you as a Maryland student, the amount of people that posted pictures from the tailgate or even from the game that said, well, at least we won the tailgate, or that's why I only go to the tailgate as the caption. You know what? It kind of, games like this kind of give those people credit in a lot of ways. And that's the attitude that you create when you're in the midst of trying to set a better standard that Maryland can be a football school, and then you go out and lose like that, suddenly everyone's just like, you know what, it's great. Their Saturday football games, that's just for the partying. Forget the game. You know, they're going to let us down anyway.
Yeah, and that's got to make Loxley and the program feel better about themselves, knowing that there are students here, there are fans in the area that want this team to succeed and will show out in big game scenarios and even in non-big game scenarios. Just if they are to put together a team that's successful, they'll have fans come out. And I talked to some friends, I talked to some other students. That first quarter, when they scored a touchdown, went up 7-3, and obviously they were still winning after that first quarter. Some people were telling me that it was the best or the most fun quarter of football they've ever watched or been in person to see, which is, it's saying something. Obviously, the rest of the game didn't turn out the way they wanted it to, but to say for some people that it was the most exciting quarter of football that they've been a part of is definitely saying something.
So, and I'll point to that is Jordan, the former co-host of the Young Terps podcast. He told me that was one of the best quarters of football that he has seen. It's one of the more, especially when it comes to Maryland, and him and I have been all over the place to see Maryland games. He's been to almost as many as I have, and that's almost every home game since 2006. That was, to hear him say that brings a lot of almost disappointment, even more so to a lot of fans, because that was kind of felt like one of the moments for this coaching staff and for this program. And yeah, they're going to get other opportunities. That's the joy of playing in the Big Ten East. But you know, you really had it. You were up by a couple points, you know, Iowa pushing, obviously driving going into the second quarter, but you're still winning at the end of the first quarter. And to hear so many people say that, and you know, we were at the game when RG3 ran 85 yards on a read option play to beat the Vikings in overtime. You know, there are big games that we've been to that aren't Maryland games, but to hear even him say that that's one of the bigger, you know, environments, and that's one of the more hyped up environments that he's been in, it was really just disappointing they couldn't finish it, couldn't make it a game and kind of carry that momentum on to the rest of the season. But you know, going into this week, you get the opportunity to turn all the haters off again because they're certainly out there now. You get another opportunity, and that's what Coach Loxley has to talk about to his team about. How do you respond? How do you move on to the next game? And how do you get your quarterback back together?
Yeah, and that's one of the big things for me moving into the Ohio State game is Loxley's always preached about discipline, and that's the one thing that kind of derailed them Friday night. It was the fact that they kept turning the ball over, kept committing costly penalties, whether they were actual penalties or not. They were definitely called. You can't be doing that, especially now you're going against the number 7 team in the country in Ohio State. They've got to clean up that stuff, and there are definitely things that are out of their control. That is one thing that is definitely in their control, especially on that first drive specifically. They had 2 false starts. That's just one thing I'm pointing out that forced them to eventually punt, and those are specific things that cannot be happening definitely against Ohio State this weekend.
Yeah, and those are 2 plays that a lot of people have been highlighting that I find to be compelling in a lot of ways. And I agree with you, Jack. That is one of those things I feel that absolutely cannot happen on the road. I thought when those plays happened that, you know what, first drive of the game, big game, bunch of fans in the place. Yeah, you got some jitters. But it was the continued 15-yard penalties, pass interference, unsportsmanlike conducts, roughing the passers. When you absolutely lose your head and you talk about discipline 24/7, really, it made Coach Loxley look like a clown. I feel like this game, more than anything, made Loxley look really bad to the fan base. Because that 2019 game, well, I agree with you, completely different games. Maryland had every opportunity to be in the game against Iowa, and they threw it all away, as opposed to just not even looking like they belonged in the same division as they did against Penn State in 2019. But when you talk about now for 3 years, getting a discipline together, setting a standard, make promotional things about setting the standard going into this game, and then you get the result, the penalties, the losing of Leo, really losing his head, throwing balls he shouldn't throw, being beat by a naked bootleg probably 8 times in 3 drives. When things like that begin to happen, it makes the coaching staff really look really bad, I'll be honest, because you can't talk about discipline all the time and then have your team, when they're faced with adversity, completely crumble. Those 2 things, there's some mismatch of culture between the coaches and the players.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So I know we're going to do another podcast next or later in the week about this while I was thinking, but what are your expectations, like realistic expectations heading into this weekend?
My realistic expectation is not one that's very positive, I will say. I went back and I watched the Iowa game, kind of last point on that. And Wayne and I do like to break these games down, especially when a player has a night kind of like Leah did. Iowa basic cover 2 shell, played underneath a lot of Maryland's mid 10, 15-yard routes that Leah really likes to rely on, and they really got him with that. I expect Ohio State's defensive staff and a really accomplished one that they have will do similar. They're going to sit under Maryland's routes and try and make the Terps either stretch the field vertically or stay disciplined to a run game without a really primetime running back. I felt like Fleet Davis played well. He needs more touches. Right now, I think Maryland responds early if they can get the good momentum going. I think they have a much better response. But at the same time, Jack, I kind of feel pressed that they got that good start that I've been looking for years against a big-name team, and they couldn't convert on that. I think if Maryland gets some momentum going, Ohio State, I do put in the beatable category. I've not really loved what I've seen from the Buckeyes. Really impressive performance against a Rutgers team this last weekend. Realistically, I think you're looking at another 3-plus interception game, and I think that gives us about all the information we need to on the result that I expect. But we'll talk about the result and my predicted result more on our podcast later this week. What do you expect?
Yeah, one thing, I don't know if it's something I expect or something that I feel that Maryland needs to do, is I think they need to get more creative on offense. You were talking about how Iowa played a bunch of cover 2 and you expect Ohio State to do the same thing. Well, Maryland's down their top, I would say, offensive playmaker, and that's why I think Maryland needs to get more creative. Find ways to not only get your playmakers in the position to make plays, but in different areas, in different sections of the field, making sure that you can still move the ball down the field, but not in the same way you have been, because Iowa obviously was able to pick out ways to defend that. So they need to get more creative and find ways, different ways to move the ball down the field.
And that's another thing that I've pointed out over time with Michael Oxley, as both a pro and a con, is his offense is really simple. At Alabama, he ran a lot of the same plays he runs at Maryland, except he had Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle. I mean, you can go down the list. There's a lot of NFL players on Michael Oxley's Alabama team. Without Dante Demas, and given Maryland didn't really even run enough plays to judge this, I felt like the Terps playbook was immediately limited. They were running a lot of different, they were doing a different play set at the beginning of this game. Demas running deep over the middle, Dyches going deep over the middle. You know, some they were opening up different parts of the field, kind of trying to get that playbook a little bit more open. And I think that this was a great time to do that against Iowa. Now, it didn't work out. But when you look at countering and what to do when you don't have your best player, Rakim Jarrett's got to get the ball a lot. They got to get him involved early, possibly out of the backfield. I really liked when they tried that week one, even though it didn't work out. And get back to kind of running those swing passes, getting to the boundaries. Ohio State is a fast football team, and they will cover those plays, but you still have to work your playbook front to back like they like to do, throw the swing passes early, get the DBs up, test the safety's eye discipline, and then test them deep. You can run the same play set. That's what Loxley has talked about. That's what Enos, and before Enos, Scotty Montgomery talked about, is we can play a plug-and-play offense. Now, some guys are clearly better than others, but everybody knows the route trees, and that will be tested this weekend. All your preparation of a backup, of another valid wide receiver, will be tested. And if they don't have another guy ready to go, now, obviously, you're not going to have Demas' skill level, but another guy ready to go and run his role, I think there's a lot more questions that need to be asked than, is Dante Demas' injury going to affect the rest of the season? That is a program defining injury in a lot of ways. If you don't have another guy that can step into the role and even run the routes as a decoy, that would be really disappointing to see to me. I'm not saying that they're not in that position, but things really seem to spiral out of control when Demas was injured. I don't want to put too much stock into one game, just like Loxley says, just like every coach would say, but you got to bounce back. Somebody else has got to step up and fill the role, at least run the routes.
Yeah, and one thing that can help them out with that is, as I was saying earlier, is get the run game more involved. You were saying that Tarron Fleet-Davis needs to get more carries. The fact that Leo was their leading rusher with 24 yards says a lot. And I think the running game will definitely help Leo out and will limit the amount of big play decisions he has to make, which led to the 5 interceptions. So I think that needs to be something that Maryland needs to look at, getting the running game more involved.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't really think as much with – I think even if it's just Fleet-Davis running the football, you got to run the ball more. And I think some read option action might help Leo, let him get out and run. I think building confidence needs to be the goal. How do we move on game to game? Because if you remember, Jack, week one of last season, there was a very similar performance from this football team. They came back week two and beat that Minnesota team in overtime by 1 point. So they certainly can respond. It's just, it's a big difference from getting beat by an Iowa team, having some of your best players go down, and then having to go on the road to Columbus, then going out to Evanston, getting a similar beatdown that Iowa gave Maryland, and then coming back home in front of no fans, really not a lot of pressure on a Friday night against a Minnesota team that had to travel. But this team has responded in the past, and you hope they would. I really would like to see Fleet-Davis get the ball. Ohio State did not look good against Oregon. They've looked better since, but Maryland can cause problems. They really can. They can get out and put up some points. You would just like to see them do it against a big-name opponent.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see them bounce back. I think they can, like you were saying, but we'll see on Saturday.
Yeah, and my kind of final point on this is I was really disappointed by the response of the Maryland fan base. While this game was disappointing, it was not what we wanted to see. It's also not a reason, even though I've said some things, but all based on later in the season, that question what Coach Loxley can do. This isn't a game where I personally, and again, not really judging other people that had possible overreactions after the game, because I was certainly disappointed. This isn't the time to say we should fire the coach and throw this whole program and almost the TBA, the best is ahead mission, out the window. This isn't the time to do that. It's year three of a coach that adopted a program that was absolutely broken And a lot of those players are still in the program. Now, I'm not saying these guys should not have performed better in any way, but I don't think this is the exact moment to say this is never going to work. Fire Locksley. Let's move on. This whole program isn't going to work. They dumped all this money into it. They had this new scoreboard, and they couldn't do anything with it. This is not the time to say that. I think that as a program, you cannot let this game define you, but it definitely can in the long run if you let it. I've said multiple times this year that they have big opportunities to do big things. This Saturday isn't necessarily an opportunity. Obviously, it is. You're on the road at Ohio State, but not in the same way that I talked about it last week. This is your game where you say, we're not that same team that's going to lose 73-14 like they did in the first year of Locksley, then come back and lose the next week 59-7. So where you say, yeah, we lost a game. We got absolutely blown out. That was a mess. But you come back the next week and you compete. You clearly see the players are trying hard. Their head is in the game and everybody's back together. But I really don't think this is the time for people to give up on this team, throw this whole season out and walk away. I think that's a ridiculous overstatement. And that's the reason why Maryland fans are Maryland fans and people don't really like Maryland fans, because they're fair weather, especially when it comes to football. Everybody wanted to go to this game. It was a huge event, trying to get everybody out to it. And then they lose and everybody walks away. Now, I'm not saying that the result didn't warrant some of that, but you can't give up. This is still a newer program that's trying to find its way into building up a standard. Because there's certainly no question about what the standard is at Ohio State, but Maryland's still trying to find that in themselves.
Yeah, and that's why I think I was going to say this game is big to bounce back for many different reasons, and you highlighted a bunch of them. It's big for Leah. It's big for Mike Locksley. It's big to get these fans back engaged and show them that Friday night was not what this program is about and not going to be a repetitive sight for this program.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, is you got to figure out how to do it. You got to move on, and you figure out what's next. And I think, Jack, that wraps it up for me. And we'll be back later this week to talk about the Ohio State game. Jack, you still there? Jack?
Hey, Mason, sorry, did I cut out?
Yeah, you did.
All right, sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
I'll count you in, then I'll edit it back together.
Where did you leave off?
I said, Jack, do you have any more points for this week? Or for the, like, Iowa recap or something like that? Basically, do you have anything else to say on this show?
Okay.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say about this entire Maryland-Iowa game is the fact that, yeah, they didn't put out the best performance possible, but they need to put the game behind them and move forward. Leah especially cannot be thinking about this game much longer. It was probably the worst game he's at least had in a while, or maybe even his career. He needs to put it behind him and just put his best step forward and move on.
Yeah, Jack, I'll echo that point too. It's about moving on. It's about getting over adversity. Let's see what happens this week. I'm interested to see what Coach Locksley has to say tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get some injury updates, and maybe Brandon Jennings will give the Terps a big boost at inside linebacker. We'll be back on Wednesday of this week, per usual, talking about the Ohio State game. And as always, thanks for listening.